All right, we are back. Episode 2 of season 5. Overheard at Kelly's, joined by Evan Jackson, as always. And we're going to be running through some week 3 matchups along with some other topics and a special interview with a guest to be named later. But first off, Evan, how is it going?
Well, tonight's been a pretty triumphant night for me. We'll talk about that later. I was pretty down in the dumps coming into this week, came out off of a really tough loss. It seems like the last few times I've played Danny, it's not even been a contest. There's not much I could have done about that specifically, but I wasn't feeling too great about my team. Some of these things have changed recently, and I'm really at this point just looking forward to the future of my team and the rest of the season.
Well, good stuff. The early reviews on Hack Week, what do you think?
I had a great time. I feel like last year was awesome. It was really eye-opening seeing everybody come back in 2018, so I had pretty high expectations for it. In 2019, a few people were missing, and their presence was sorely and definitely missed. But I think for everybody that was there, everybody put up good performances. Nobody was faltering behind. Everybody stuck together, and I had a lot of fun, and it was well worth the rough morning on Sunday, and in some cases the rough morning on Monday. I was still feeling the effects, but I wouldn't have changed it for anything.
I think that sums it up perfectly. I thought in 2018 we might have just left a little bit, or actually outperformed on Friday and almost exhausted too much of our gas, or at least I did personally, because Saturday was a very tough day for me. At least I struggled mightily, but I feel like this year from start to finish everyone was in good spirits, and it was a blast, and hopefully it continues for years to come.
Yeah, it definitely had a little bit of a different vibe, I thought. You know, especially on my end, a few people staying at my apartment, so a little bit more removed from Rutgers kind of makes it feel like a little bit more of an adult, like adults going back to school versus like, oh yeah, I graduated like last year, like I'm basically still a kid. Like, and then I liked doing the off-campus activities as well. Like, I thought it was a nice, refreshing change of pace going out to Morristown.
Yeah, I thought that was key.
Yeah, versus just like a second night at Queens. Not that, you know, kudos to Queens for the renovations, and it's a really great, great, great bar. It was already a great bar for what it was. Now it's probably even better. But I thought, you know, there's nothing like stepping foot into the Iron Bar basement and just time warping to 2 a.m. Yes. So.
That was as good of a time as that I've had at Queens, I think, on Friday. It was very fun. The new setup is great. For those who haven't been, highly recommend. It's a different experience.
And we were not paid to say this.
We were not. This is completely unendorsed, just off the top, out of pure enjoyment. And then, like you said, Evan, the off-site trip, off-campus trip to Iron Bar was awesome. I think there were whispers of AC in lead up to the Hackberry as a potential landing spot, but I thought
AC, really?
Yeah, that was way earlier when Chang was still thinking about going. So that's just it could be interesting, like especially if there's not a Rutgers football game in town, just to drive out early Saturday and potentially do AC on Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. Could be something to think about. But I thought this year was awesome.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
We can roll right into the week 3 recap. We'll get back to what we did last year and just run through each matchup. Just talk about it quickly, talk about the status of the team, and then go to the next. And we can start with – who should we start with? Let's go with
– does it always show your matchup at the top?
Yeah, at least for me. So I was going to start – I was going to go bottom up.
And then is yours – well, you're at the bottom of mine. So we could just start.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we either start that one, or who's second on your list? Was it Jack and Lou?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, and then it goes B. Smith, Walsh, EY, and then you and Morn.
Then it goes, you're actually third for mine.
Oh, that's weird. All right, well then, you can just read them out and we'll go through.
All right, let's start with Mike Howe versus Eric Young. A West Coast battle. Mike took victory 113 to 102. Top performers. This is actually a nice new setting. I will give ESPN this. That they show the top performers for each team. It makes our jobs easier. But Dak, Mike has been a big, big Dak supporter. I was not high on Dak coming into this year. I thought he was kind of a fake QB1, but he's proved to, at least thus far through 3 weeks, be a steady auto lock to start. He put up 21. And then we discussed Rex last week. It's an essential. It's almost as if the Kelly season doesn't start until Mike has Rex not only on his roster but in the lineup, and this took place this week, and what do you know, he puts up 18 points. And then finally Kelsey with 15, and it was just enough to take down EY, who had a nice performance from Mark Ingram, 35 points, but it just wasn't enough to catch Mike.
Well, I mean the gut-wrenching thing for EY, and unfortunately, this seems to have become a theme with him, specifically drafting. I think he drafted number one overall this year, and an injury early to his draft pick. I don't know if you remember, but he took David Johnson first overall in 2016, I think.
Oh, wow.
Or was it 2017? When he broke his wrist in the first game. And then I think EY had him on his bench the whole year because they kept saying, like, oh, he'll be back in 8 weeks. He'll be back in by Thanksgiving. He'll be back by Christmas. And then he just never came back. And, I mean, I think, you know, conservatively, people are saying Barkley 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, he's a freak of nature, and sometimes you see these guys come back from these injuries. It's not like he didn't break his ankle. It's a high ankle sprain. So I don't really know how these guys – sprain their ankles. I mean, because they're so taped up, but I guess that just goes to show you how fast and like the force.
Yeah, they're cutting so hard on the turf, and then.
And all it takes is just like one snap, and then that tendon or ligament is getting severed. So hard luck for EY. I feel bad because once again, it looked like he was really shaping up to have a great season.
It begs the question if EY made a deal with the devil, because he seems extremely happy. He's got he's in love with his girlfriend. Congrats. Which is great. Mm-hmm. He's being successful in his career. Graduated school, but did it come at the cost of losing your first round draft pick each year in the Kelly's Corner Fantasy League?
I would almost suggest EY, because at this point, is this a coincidence? I'm starting to think maybe it's not. So, EY, maybe next year when you inevitably get the first or second pick of the draft.
Trade
it. Because it seems like this draft order is never, ever influenced by anyone. I mean,
Frank the Tank.
Yeah. Well, no, I was talking about the commissioner influencing the draft, because it's really come to my attention that pretty much the positions stay exactly the same. I always draft at the end of the draft. EY is always in the first few picks. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I've already said my piece on what I think about the collusion in this league. What I was going to suggest to EY is maybe when he gets a high draft pick next year, maybe he trades back. You know, take a few picks in the later rounds. Like, listen, EY, if you take somebody in the first round, they're probably just going to get hit by a bus the next day.
Yeah, don't get greedy, Eric.
Trade back, and then maybe you could get 2 second-round picks, 3 third-round picks. I don't know, something crazy. And then, because it looks like he's really done well drafting in the later rounds this year. Josh Jacobs has been pretty good. Tyler Boyd has been good. Mark Andrews looks like he's been the steal of the tight end class this year. Mark Ingram's been great. So he's got good players. Not a great week for him, and obviously losing Saquon sucks. And then for Mike, I mean, he's the only 3-0 team. He's in first place. He's having a great season. It does seem like the fairy tale might be coming to, if not an end, maybe a minor speed bump with the Los Angeles Chargers news and that backfield becoming a little bit more crowded with the arrival of someone that I shall not name. And with that in mind, maybe Mike is going to have to look elsewhere. Maybe David Montgomery steps up. I know Tevin Coleman's been hurt, but maybe he comes back after the bye week and he takes a big role in that offense again. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Mike also had a really great draft with who he took. Like, I think Mecole Hardman was one of his was one of his last picks. Obviously, picking Eckler where he did paid huge dividends. And Darren Waller, I think, was a waiver wire pickup or a free agent pickup. I don't think he drafted him. Maybe he did. And he's no longer on his team, but he got capital back for that. So that was a good move by him. So good job by Mike. Good job by EY with their drafts. And it'll be interesting to see what the rest of the season holds for them.
All right, next. At least what I'm looking at, we have Matthew Walsh versus Jacob Stockel, the matchup of jokers. And I think it's, to me, and I view Walsh as almost like a Jake Jr. in a way.
I can see it.
But I think fantasy-wise, Walsh's team really fired on all cylinders. Lockett went off against the Saints. McCaffrey was back to himself after the tough Thursday night performance, I believe. And then Jameis finally looking like his what people thought he should be at 25 points. Thus, even though it's in a loss, still put up good numbers for Walsh. Jameis losing to the Giants, but
Jameis was formerly on my team. I drafted him as my backup quarterback, and then I dropped him after it looked like he was pretty much hopeless. And then Walsh picked him up, and that was an inspired pickup. And now I might be paying the ultimate price where Walsh is starting him against me this week. But I guess we'll just have to see.
Could be a revenge game for Jameis.
Yeah, I agree with the with the Walsh-Jake comparisons, especially in concerns to fantasy football. Because I always feel like they, like Walsh and Jake always have extremely strong, like high boom or high ceiling starting lineups. And then just over the course of the season, just have no depth.
Yeah.
And then, so like they'll have like 140 point weeks, but then also like 80 point weeks.
Yeah,
like you never know what you're going to get with them. And I mean, Walsh rode one of those teams all the way to the finals a few years ago. And I know Jake's been, I think, in the semifinals a few times. So that was a very apt comparison, Ryan.
Thank you. And also, just from a non-fantasy standpoint, at least I believe that Chicago was – they've hung out before for sure. But Chicago – a few weeks ago was definitely the first, I think, extended period of time that they spent together. At least I think that's what Jake told me, but I think got along great. And I don't know, some similarities there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I guess for Jake with that performance, Wentz, good game. Brandon Cooks, a good game, and Christian Kirk, a good game. And I guess, you know, if his top performers were only getting 21, 19, and 15, and he still put up 110. I'm assuming, I think I could click into the box score. I'm assuming that he probably had a pretty well-rounded performance. Like, there wasn't anybody really, oh, never mind. Yeah, so he ended up, Todd Gurley has been not great this year, and he had Kenyon Drake, who actually got 7 points, which I feel like is pretty good. But then the rest of his players all got double digits, other than his kicker. So it was a pretty well-rounded performance by Jake. He outscored his projection of 105, but Walsh just had a better week. He had a few guys go off. Because actually, other than his top performers of those three mentioned, his next highest was the Bills defense with 11. So he had three booms, and that bested Jake's pretty even keel lineup. So
it's pretty crazy.
And it's always interesting how sometimes it seems like you look at a guy's, like, you just look at the team and what the points he scored, and you're like, all right, that guy, he probably had like 95 points, and then it adds up to 120 somehow. But interestingly, with Walsh, and I mean interestingly for us, but extremely unfortunate for him, is a misplacement of his cell phone this weekend resulted in him not being able to check his fantasy score.
Wow.
So being the great friend that I was taking screenshots and sending them to our mutual friend Stevie so that Walsh could see his score. But in the morning, Walsh is asking me if I could check to make sure none of his players are out for the day. Like nobody got injured in warmups, because he wouldn't have been able to change it even if he wanted to, because he didn't know he didn't remember his ESPN password.
Oh my god!
So he had no chance of doing anything, and he came out on top. So an extremely gritty performance by him. Congrats on the win. I think he's 2-1 now.
He's 2-1.
He's trending in the right direction. Him and I have a huge matchup this week. And I look forward to doing battle.
Yep. From Jake's perspective, you can't, for RB1 and RB2, you can't put up a total of 11 points. It's not gonna do it. All right, let's see what we have next. It's gotta load. We have Pat McAfee's Pipe Breakers versus Old and Washed Up. Billy Rose versus Brendan. Shootout. Alvin Kamara went off. I watched the game. In my opinion, his most complete game as a New Orleans Saint so far in his career. Extremely impressive. Probably not his highest fantasy total. He did put up 36, but he was just – he had several, like, jaw-dropping, unbelievable plays. He's special talent. And obviously, Billy gets his guys. It's something that's been discussed in previous seasons. He always gets a couple Saints, which you got to respect. But it paid off this week with 36. Amari Cooper, 26 points, the next highest for Billy. He's been a stud. He's been freed from Derek Carr out in Oakland, now working with Dak, which we discussed earlier with Mike, and that pairing is working nicely. And this final name is kind of funny as it comes full circle from last year. A player that was referred to once as Dirt by his current manager, but now is known as RB2, I believe.
Yeah, that was... maybe that was a motivation tactic by Billy when he said those now infamous words as a kind of prove me wrong and I'll draft you next year.
True.
If so, that's next level planning by him, although we would expect nothing less at this point.
That's correct. And then B. Smith, he proved himself right in this trade. Lindsay, starting off his career with Brendan with 28 points. Julio was Julio with 26. And DJ Chark. I'm honestly not too familiar. I feel like Jaguars are where receivers go to die, so to say. But with Gardner behind center, I guess times are changing. Put up 17 points.
Yeah, I think he's a rookie, right? Is he?
I don't know what school he's from. But I think he is a rookie.
He was a waiver wire ad for sure.
LSU.
He's only 23 years old. Date joined 2018. So is he a rookie?
Must have been 4 years at LSU if he's a rook.
No, he played last year. He was drafted last year. But last year he only had 14 receptions for 174 yards. So
wow.
He's taken a big sophomore step. He's been really good. I think he's got
he's been
consistent,
pretty solid.
Yeah. Good for B. Smith. Good pickup. So yeah, interesting that trade immediately paid dividends for Philip Lindsay. Julio Jones looks like he's going to be having one of his best seasons of his career, especially now that touchdowns have become a big part of his game again. I think there was a season where he only had like three. And then we were just talking about Chark coming out of nowhere and really contributing. But I would say B-Smith's team is good. I think the Philip Lindsay trade has kind of revitalized his running back position because Mixon's been good, but it's just tough to be consistently producing at the running back position on a team with basically no defense like what Cincinnati has.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess sometimes you'll have these quarterbacks that will just dump off every single play, kind of similar to like McCaffrey or what Barkley was experiencing last year. But I think it seems to me like Dalton just likes to throw the ball around versus just taking the first read, and then if it's not there, checking down to his running back.
And I don't know if Mixon is much of a – I think he's, like, competent, but I don't think he's much of, like, a pass catcher.
Yeah, so it's tough. I mean, I think he's talented. I think he's a very talented running back. Like, if he was on a different team, I think he'd be great. And not that he's not a very good running back to have, but yeah, I think maybe his ceiling is capped a little bit having a defense like that on the other side of the ball. And then Aaron Rodgers has been obviously disappointing up to this point. I think there might be a little bit of a changing of the guard this season. Obviously, you've already lost to Roethlisberger. Eli has been forced to step down after an illustrious career, a Hall of Fame career. And now, you know, Rodgers isn't as old as them, but he's been in the league for a long time with those, like, what was it, 3 years that he sat out? So maybe this is the beginning of the end for probably one of the most talented quarterbacks the league has seen in its history. And if so, that's unfortunate. But you know, who knows? Maybe he turns it around. And then bench-wise for B-Smith, because I think this is worth pointing out, there is not much there.
Let's take a look.
Duke Johnson, Robbie Anderson, Devin Singletary, DeSean Jackson, Jimmy G, TJ Hockenson, and Mohamed Sanu. TJ Hockenson played a great Joker's trick week one.
He did. He really did.
Getting what was it, like 130-something yards and then going 0 and 1 point. So kudos to him on a great trick. Didn't know he had it in him. And then Sanu was a good pickup. Kind of just a steady, even keel player. He'll probably always be good for between 8 and 14 points. But you wouldn't really like if you're down by 5 and you have Sanu up, like left to play, you probably feel pretty good. But like if you're down by 18 points and you have Sanu, you're probably like, all right, like it's gonna take a miracle.
Yep. And I think for has there ever been a group of receivers that lost as much value as the New York Jets receivers did when Darnold got mono? I don't think so.
No, because well, they went from like Sivian refusing to throw past the line of scrimmage to Falk, who just sucks. But what I will say about Robbie Anderson is, yes, he's been unlucky with his quarterbacks, but this isn't an indictment on B-Smith. But I will say that the writing was on the wall for Robbie Anderson to have an extremely difficult year when you look at the juggernaut of cornerbacks that he's going to be facing. But if you look at his, if you look at his schedule, he plays basically a who's who of good elite shutdown shadow corners. Like he'll go obviously the bye, and then he has Philly, which is a good matchup. And then I think Dallas is decent. But then he goes New England, Jacksonville, Miami, the Giants, Washington, Oakland, Cincinnati, Miami, Baltimore, Pitt. So, I mean, right there you have New England, Jacksonville, if Jalen Ramsey's still on the team, Miami, Xavier Howard, New York Giants, Janoris Jenkins, Redskins, Josh Norman, Oakland, not sure, Cincinnati, not sure. But, yeah, not a great lineup. And then luckily for him, if B-Smith gets to the championship, it's Pitt, and he doesn't have to play the Tre'Davious White a second time because they play the Bills in Week 17. But, yeah, so tough. And it's also tough for B-Smith. I mean, he's 0-3, but he lost by 100. He put up 128 points. So I think that's more than probably some people have put up all season that have one or two wins. So that's a real tough one for him. And then you know, I think we touched on Billy's team a little bit, but obviously Billy's been running his mouth pretty much with no regard for anything this year, but he's really backed it up with his performances, and that's really all you can ask. He's got a very well-rounded team, in my opinion, and this is without Alshon Jeffrey playing and Jarvis Landry still not really living up to his PPR darling potential. But I think Billy's got a good shot this year, and hits close to home for you since you and him recently colluded on a trade.
Well, with Billy putting up 145 points, getting less than double digits from his quarterback, obviously there's a need there. Me, I had great expectations for Jared Cook. Hasn't panned out thus far. Stashed him on my bench, but I think we made what is unquestionably a fair trade on both sides. I'll be bringing in Austin Hooper, Atlanta Falcons, Pro Bowler last year. Has been steady thus far, getting good target share for Matt Ryan and Billy, Russell Wilson, who's been great, had his best game of the year against the Saints last week in the rain. Steady quarterback. He's always going to throw. He's magician and extending plays. So Baker hasn't quite lived up to the hype this year. So I think both teams got better, and we'll see how it pans out. But I think the initial review from, of course, an unbiased source being involved is that pretty fair trade.
I think it was a good trade for both of you. Both have a need, and it's also tough to trade quarterbacks because obviously everybody already has one or two. And usually most people have at least one competent one. So it's tough to really get good value. Like, I have Mahomes, and I feel like I wouldn't trade Mahomes for less than, like, a top-tier running back or wide receiver. But nobody would ever trade me that because the point of differentiation between Mahomes and, like, the number two quarterback or the number three quarterback at the end of the year isn't going to be as big as the one and the five running back. You know, so it's tough, but I think you guys did it right. Here's hoping that, I guess, Hooper could keep up his production thus far. I think he's been pretty consistent in his career.
Yeah, pretty consistent.
And like he's always a part of that offense, for, like, no matter what.
Yeah, as long as I think he's probably three. I conservatively say that he's probably the third option in that offense. Which is I think okay for a tight end, but obviously Matt Ryan's gonna throw the football, so just gotta hope that he doesn't throw picks, which he can kind of tend to do. But that's a different subject.
Well, what's nice too is that their defense sucks. So
yeah, so they're always
throwing,
letting it air out. All right, let's do Jack versus Lou. Nail biter.
This was an interesting game for sure. Well, was it a nail biter though? Because Jack didn't play his defense, which he locked it up early.
He did, yeah. If it's always tough when you're up a couple points, but you still have your defense left to. I mean, when you're down a couple points, but you still have your defense left to play, that's a dangerous line to tote. But fortunately, Jack had it locked up, and he was able to just set the Bears D, even though they had a great game. But he had it all locked up, so it's just not worth it.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, because if you have your defense, like the start of the game, they give you a taste of what it could be like to win because they start at 10. So you're
and
like,
it just goes down.
Yeah, and then it just trickles down and down. I mean, Jack didn't have that problem because A, he didn't start his defense, and B, his defense got 20 points if he had started them. So what could have been a better week for him, but you know, smart play. The intelligent play to lock up the win. Jack, Dalvin Cook has obviously probably looked like one of the most electric dynamic players this year. Nelson Agholor was an extremely good start. I feel like if he's really taking advantage of the receiver situation right now in Philadelphia. And Michael Thomas, 16 points, but I feel like that's his floor. Like you're really not going to expect him to get less than 15, 16 points. And so those were Jack's top performers. So a good week for him. We'll see how his team responds to these trades, specifically the most recent one where he's sending Godwin out. So he's getting a huge upgrade at tight end. And who is he getting? Sanu, I think.
He got – who did Jack get?
He got Marvin Jones.
And Waller.
Yeah, he got, right? So he's upgrading tight end with Waller, and he's getting Marvin Jones as his second wide receiver, I'm guessing. Yeah. Wow, so Jack only has – no, he's got four. I was going to say he only has three wide receivers on his team, but he has four.
Lou's team is pretty interesting. I like it. I think he's got a good team. Leonard Fournette is kind of a question mark, I think, if he can perform how people thought that he would in his career. I think Lou's team can be very strong. Lamar Jackson he's electric. He's been great. He's going to score either with his feet or through the air. Although, watching the highlights, he did just have a few balls that he just chucked up that could have been so easily intercepted, but they were somehow caught by the offense. Like,
yeah, he had the yips.
If he's going to keep doing that, then... I think it cut out a little bit, at least for me, what you just said. Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, sorry. Just minor technical difficulties.
No worries. But yeah, I think if he keeps throwing it, those crazy throws like that, it might catch up to him, but so far so good for Lamar.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he had that unbelievable first game. But the thing I will say about Lamar Jackson is he's played basically – the three best defenses to play between Miami. Who do you play after that? The Bengals? No, Arizona. So he played Miami, home to Arizona, and at Kansas City, who don't have a good defense and have a historically good offense. So those were basically the three best, matchups for him. But, you know, his whole schedule is actually really, really good. So maybe, you know, it's not just a matter of him playing easy defenses, because if he's playing easy defenses the whole year, then it makes no difference. I think Lou's team is better than his record. I think, what is Lou, 1-2? I think Lou's team is good. Lou has also shown an extreme willingness to trade. I don't know if you've been exposed to that, but Lou is definitely backing up his wheeler-dealer mentality.
Lou and I... We went back and forth for about 3.5 hours today. We unfortunately were not able to reach an agreement on a trade. We had several packages discussed. It was productive. It was friendly. But just as business goes, if two parties can't reach a conclusion, then you shake hands and move on, and that's what happened. But I give Lou credit. He was great to work with, and he's been, I think, a great addition to the league.
A true professional.
True professional, missed it hack week, but he was living life in the hurricane, so hopefully that was all right.
He was storm chasing.
Storm chasing, and then we'll hope to see him next year.
I would say also trade-wise, it's tough. It's tough because I feel like sometimes I'd be like, all right, yeah, I'll do this trade. And then I look at my team, and I'm like, no, I drafted these guys for a reason, or I picked them up for a reason. I don't want to bail on them yet. So I think trades are tough unless there's a clear and obvious need between both players or both teams that one team or that each team has a surplus of. Like you and Billy's trade made sense. Ryan or Jack and Mike's trade made sense because they were clear and obvious needs that the other teams had surpluses of. But I feel like Lou doesn't, in my opinion, have a clear and obvious need anywhere, but he just wants to trade.
Maybe at tight end.
Yeah, but I feel like tight end's a tough one because so many people have. Although I will say it's not as bad as last year. It's early though, so injuries haven't hit as much. But it looks like, you know, knock on wood, might not be the wasteland that it was last year.
I think Billy, I think running back is similar to tight end this year in a way, since you have to go too deep. But I think Billy might have the best starting running backs, and Lou might be a close second. Sneaky.
Lou with Fournette and
Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I think people kind of got euphoria with Henry early this year, since he has always been like, okay, is this finally going to be Derrick Henry's year? Like, he was behind DeMarco Murray at the start of his career, and it's like, all right, like, as soon as DeMarco Murray leaves, it's going to be like the Derrick Henry show. And then last year, he finally puts together a string of really great games and like the most important part of the fantasy season. And then this year, he starts off hot. So people are like, okay, this is the new normal for Derrick Henry. I think he's going to come back down to earth a little bit if he did not already with this 14-point performance. But you know what? Tennessee has a good defense. They have a commitment to the run. So at this point, I do think, you know, if there is a drop-off, I think Derrick Henry is still going to be a good player. So I think that's a good call by you saying that low-key Lou may be the best running back combos. I mean, maybe I throw my hat in the ring there with
with the news. With the news that's developed, I think you're throwing your hat in the ring for sure.
Yeah, I would, you know, always humble, but I think I would put myself there. But yeah, I do. It does seem to be a trend where running back is the position that you want to load up on, and then wide receiver is the one where you just need one superstar, one guaranteed to get a bunch of targets a game, and then you could kind of fill out from there. But I just think running backs are so important these days.
Yeah, especially in PPR.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We could do my matchup.
Okay.
I think it's just me and yours left, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Obviously a tough one. It was looking favorable for me. Well, at least not favorable, but it looked to be close for a while. Until Keenan Allen, that was a marathon of a game, and he got a ton of points late in that matchup, which put the knife in it. And then Cooper Kupp obviously just got it out of hand, but the game was already over at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Morin, we've talked about this in the past. This is exactly what Morin does. Morin will have weeks like this where he puts up over 150. In this case, it was 163. He's got that serious boom potential. He's shown that he can draft teams. It's not surprising. I was just on the short end of the stick here.
Yeah, I think, well, they say, this is something that I've read, is that, you know, you set up your team to score around 120 points a week, and that's really, really what you're looking for. And then plus or minus there, it'll depend on the matchup. So you hit that mark. But there's just nothing you could do. Pretty much anytime somebody scores 150 plus, there's really nothing you could do. Like, you're probably not going to, like, you know, there's maybe like six or seven of those the entire year. Like, yep. One player might get one of those games once a year. So if you're unfortunate enough to be on the side of that, then it sucks. But there's nothing you could do.
Hey, you just tip your cap and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you had a good week. And then obviously, Morin's players just had video game like numbers. I mean, Keenan Allen had what, 13 receptions, so he's really benefited from Rivers' arm, the last remaining member of that 2004 draft class. And Morin's team, I think on the whole, is good. David Johnson looks like, you know, maybe he's not that 2015 was it or 2016 version where he was putting up like 30 points a game. But he seems to be a pretty steady 17 to 25 point a game player. And then Aaron Jones seems to have all the talent in the world, just doesn't ever get really the opportunity to run with it, literally and figuratively. But maybe this year will be more faith put into Aaron Jones. And Morin's wide receivers, I think, are probably the most desirable situation where they're the high volume favorite target of a quarterback that likes to throw and an offense that throws a lot.
Yeah.
So like Julio Jones is probably maybe one of the most talented quarterback or running wide receivers, you know, just like physically gifted. But it seems like these guys like Keenan Allen or Cooper Kupp, where like, they're always open for like the 10, 12-yard completion or the 5 to 8-yard completion, and the quarterback just keeps churning out. Like, yep. They'll probably get – like these guys are averaging like 10-plus targets a game. That's a joke.
Yeah, it's so, insane.
Morton's team is – yeah, he's good, and then he's got a good bench, I think. And then if I could touch on your team, I think it's – you know, it's tough for you. You've been a little bit of the Grim Reaper when it comes to drafting players that then choose to sit out the year. And I do think you could probably say that Antonio Brown's was maybe a choice, seeing as he could have been sitting pretty in Oakland. I mean, obviously he's had the maybe I don't think it's a criminal case right now. It's just that civil case, but you know, something you never like to see in any league occurring. But I thought he would have been good at Oakland, and then he kind of torpedoed that, and then you know maybe current events have led him out of the Patriots. But the rest of your team, who knows? I mean, how do you feel? You got – so obviously Russell Wilson had an incredible game. And then the rest of your bench combined had 4 points. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think my team hasn't quite shown what it can do just yet. I honestly think that Deshaun and DeAndre haven't had that game where they have that chemistry that we've seen in the past. So I'm not even close to hitting the panic button on that. But I think that we're going to – the best is yet to come for those two. I think with a player like Thielen, he's when they're throwing the ball, Kirk is looking to him. Teams are going to start to key in on Dalvin Cook, so I'm not hitting the panic button on Thielen just yet. I know his numbers this past week were a little bit fake and saved by a touchdown. I think he had 3 targets or 3 receptions, and one was for a touchdown. I believe that's what it was, and I think upgrading the tight end position is huge for me. Marquise Brown, tough week last week, but he's the clear number one option when Lamar is throwing it. So I think he's a formidable flex. And if it was hard not having James White in the lineup, he obviously birthed his child, and congrats on that. So just everyone.
Yeah, I had the scoop on that extremely early.
I like my bench too.
Well, your bench is deceiving. Like, Adam Thielen's scoreline was deceiving. Your bench is deceiving because – so, obviously, Antonio Brown is dead weight at this point, and I think you've already dropped him. James White wasn't playing, you know, something that happens every 9 months, and that's if he's extremely busy, the birth of his child. Michael Gallup was hurt, I think, right? Kareem Hunt still – it'll be interesting to see what happens with Hunt because, I mean – I know you drafted him probably anticipating that he would either share or maybe even take over in Cleveland. I think at this point, your best case scenario for him is he comes back and it's a timeshare. Maybe when he comes back, is the NFL trade line or trade deadline already finished? I think so, right?
Yeah, it's going to be like week 10.
Oh, yeah. So I guess he's not really going to be trade bait. I like Herndon. And I like Crowder, too. I think the Jets' offense is better than they've seen. They've played really tough defenses.
Well, Crowder had, I believe, 16 receptions in that first game with Sam Darnold. And there, obviously, when that happens, there's a chemistry there. So the past couple games have been tough. But when I saw him on the waivers, I knew I had to pick him up. Because you just – even if he doesn't find his way into my lineup, then someone's going to need him if he keeps churning out those numbers. So just a stash.
I think he's a good player to keep. He had 14 receptions for unbelievably less than 100 yards, 99, and that was comprised of 17 targets. So that's unbelievable. So I think your team, you know, record aside, is on at this point in the season, though, it's also easy to say, oh, everybody's team is like, you know, record aside, it's looking up. Because it's still early in the season and anything can happen. Like at this point in the season, Nick Chubb was wasting away on the waiver wire. And by the end of the season, he was involved in a blockbuster trade for Todd Gurley. Yep. So, you know, fortunes can change at the snap of a hat or the snap of a finger or whatever that expression is. But I do think that your team probably is not yet peaking. And it looks like if I had to guess your strategy was you were really drafting for a strong second half. I mean, Miles Sanders wasn't really expected to be contributing much early on. I think most sources had him coming on late in the season, like second half, and taking over that backfield.
Yep.
And then obviously Kareem Hunt was the long play. Now you've added Chris Herndon, or maybe you drafted Herndon. I don't know. But yeah, I would still be optimistic about your team.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think part of my draft strategy was obviously I had the opportunity to draft what I thought were three top 10 receivers, and as we discussed, it didn't quite work out with Antonio Brown, but I think we can put that to bed. I'm happy to wipe my hands clean. I finally pulled the trigger and dropped him, so it was a wild ride, but one that I'm happy to be off of, so it's time to move on. And with that, we can discuss the last matchup of week three, which is Evan's tough defeat against Daniel Freeman, but Evan, I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, it was extremely difficult, and I had that same feeling as I did last year in the championship game against Danny, where you're just every time you check your scores, your opponent has just gotten like 20 more points. I mean, Mike Evans, of course, the week I play him is the week that he has the best game of his career. And then the weeks previous to that, I think he had like 3 points or something. And then last week I played Godwin when he went off, and now this week he had 3 points. So I've just been getting the real short hand of the stick when it comes to Tampa Bay wide receivers. But the rest of Danny's team was good. Everybody pretty much had good weeks other than Chris Carson and his kicker. So I guess it was a little bit different than yours. I mean, we both had extremely high scoring opponents, but whereas my game was kind of out of reach quick, yours Keenan Allen had all his points late. I think Mike Evans had like 3 touchdowns in the first half, so it was pretty much all uphill. And then I guess I'll just keep talking about Danny's team for now, and then I'll move on to mine. But he drafted a very good team. I think him drafting Ezekiel Elliott obviously paid immediate dividends, and getting a player like that 7th overall is extremely fortuitous and was a great gamble by Danny in foreseeing that he would be signing before the season started. I think Chris Carson might be a little bit of a worry because he seems to have an extreme fumbling issue. But with that issue, for whatever reason, Pete Carroll has been extremely, extremely supportive of him. I think Pete Carroll had a quote today of like, "You do not know support like I do," or like, "You don't know support until you see the way I treat Chris Carson," or something ridiculous where it's like making me think that they're related. Mike Evans could be something to look into, Chris Carson's family tree. Mike Evans obviously had an unbelievable week. I don't really want to talk about that one. T.Y. Hilton, I think, got hurt and aggravated a hamstring injury, which is never a good sign for a speedy wide receiver. And then Evan Ingram has been what New York Giants and New York Giants fans have been hoping for when he was drafted in the first round. Josh Gordon had a good week and is going to really benefit from Brown not being there. And then the rest of Danny's team is good. I mean, picking out just a few other, like one other player, A.J. Green, there's whispers that he's been seen and practicing without his walking boot. So, I mean, if you add A.J. Green to Danny's lineup, I think that would be extremely, extremely potent. And I think Danny definitely has a good team this year. Despite being 1-2, I think he had been playing and his record had not been reflective of his team up until this point. And unfortunately for me, I think my record is reflective of my team up until this point. So elephant in the room is that tonight and today, there were some reports that Melvin Gordon would be reporting to the Chargers tomorrow, as soon as tomorrow, and then suiting up to play hopefully by next week. So that's obviously changed my fortunes tremendously. But up until that point, I think there could have been and should have been extreme question marks over my draft. I didn't take a wide receiver, I think, until the 5th or 6th round. I did take Melvin Gordon with the assumption that he'd be signing or coming back earlier than expected, because I crunched the numbers. And unlike the Le'Veon Bell situation, he was losing money not just from his lack of game checks, but he was also getting fined on top of that. Wow. And then you look at his pedigree, and he hadn't made as much money in his career up until that point as Bell had, and he wasn't also considered a top two or three running back as Bell had been. So I think him and his agent had probably said, all right, like, let's try to, you know, force the Chargers' hand, and if it doesn't work out, like, we'll come back. And ironically, Eckler and Justin Jackson both performing admirably in his stead probably helped me in giving Melvin Gordon a little bit of a nudge, like, you better get back there before these guys completely take over the backfield and you come back week eight.
Yep.
And you don't have a job left, and then you, you're screwed. So I think, you know, nothing's definite also, but if Melvin Gordon, as it's being reported, if he comes back, that's really huge for me. And then as for the rest of my team, wide receiver has, you know, despite not getting, you know, the marquee superstar wide receiver, like the real name value, I don't think my production from that position has been poor. And Mahomes has been everything I could have hoped for. But James Conner has been a little bit of a disappointment. You know, I'm hoping that maybe just, you know, acclimating to a new team. Now it's no Roethlisberger, no Antonio Brown, no Le'Veon Bell. That team is kind of going through a little bit of a changing of the guard. So I'm hoping that he comes back in this, you know, the next 75% of the season. And then my bench, I don't really have too much faith in, but we'll remain to be seen. I'm kind of playing the long game with my bench as well. Golden Tate. He's still suspended. One more game. And then, you know, I had been holding Melvin Gordon with, you know, the recent events. That's kind of paid off. But I had been saying my team is going to be a second-half team, and I'm hoping that comes true.
I think that's a great assessment. I think Golden Tate is going to be huge. I think people forget how electric he is. You always see, like, the crazy highlights of plays that he – it's the run after the catch. What he does is probably better than anyone in the league. So he's electric, and with Danny Dimes, that could be a sight to behold. So I think – That was a smart draft pick, and he's going to be interesting to watch.
I didn't even draft him. I picked him up. I forget who dropped him.
Wow.
Which I don't know why you would B-Smith originally drafted him, which I don't know why you would draft him if you're only going to drop him, because with guys like that, their value exponentially increases every single week because they're 1 week closer. Like with him, he was suspended, so you knew he was coming back, and you knew his talent. I guess maybe people were a little spooked because he didn't really make much noise with the Eagles last year after he got traded. However, there was a quote by, I think, the Eagles offensive coordinator who admitted to misusing Golden Tate when he was on the team last year. Mm. So I thought that was interesting for anybody that thinks that maybe Golden Tate is washed up. He's 31 or 32 now. So I'm hopeful for him. I'm hopeful for the rest of my team. I think don't be surprised if you get an email in the coming days saying that a trade offer was accepted in your league. I've really been laying out the feelers. I'm open to changing up my team. But this isn't the platform for personal endorsements, so I won't do that. But if anybody would like to send – no, I'm just kidding. no, my team, hopefully, second half, I just got to keep my head above water, and that's really my only assessment left to give.
All right. Well, speaking of trades, and everyone knows that the stove has been hot of late, especially this week and this past week. Trades have been made that have been discussed on this podcast, and there have been trades that have been talked about that haven't been made. I was in conversation with Evan, actually, earlier today. And as everyone knows, and what I dealt for today was a tight end, but this is prior to this. I was in talks with Evan just about different options and just bouncing ideas off of each other, hypotheticals. But Evan says, hey, a big brain move would be to add Ben Watson. I was like, huh, that's actually smart. He's coming back soon. Brady likes tight ends. And I look, and he's not on the waiver. So I ask, I go to Evan, I'm like, how can I pick him up if he's not there? And Evan, let me just pull up the text real quick. And then, so he goes, yeah, this is the exact text. Big brain move would be to add Ben Watson. And I go, you think? ? Evan goes, yeah, for sure. Brady loves his tight ends. And I ask Evan, who do you have as tight end? And then he goes, Will Disley. And I'm like, all right. And then he says, and my backup is Ben Watson. Please, please rate that trick. And with that, it gives me great pain to end off the first ever Joker's brag. I've never seen anything like that. Evan was dangling the carrot and then ripped it back.
It was, you know,
I've never been so shook.
It was just one of those, you know, perfect scenarios where opportunity met execution, and I was able to pull off what, in my opinion, ended up being a great trick. I'd been meaning to pull off a trick. I'd gone a while without participating. And it was just a great moment for me, able to pick me up this morning. And, you know, I'm sorry for any pain that I caused, but, you know, in this league, you can never really be too careful. You can never be too trusting. So that was just a helpful reminder by me.
Well, it was tough, but hey, it is what it is. But I think the trades are heating up. We've got some players who are all about the trades. I'm probably included in that group. Louie has shown an eagerness to be involved in trades. Mike's never afraid to trade. Jack, probably the quickest on the trigger, for worse.
I think in this league, to the league's overall health and then maybe some individual's detriment, it is an extremely active league when it comes to trades. Like, the day after the draft, people are like, everybody on my team is for sale. Like we'll be, you know, like just getting used to our rosters, and people are saying my XYZ is available.
Yeah.
I think part of it is it's fun to make trades and to talk about trades. And then I think our league is just very not results oriented. I don't know what the word would be. But whatever the next best thing is, everybody in our league wants it, and they're all willing to trade for it. And I think that makes for just a lot of fun during the season, and just a lot of fun over the course of the season. So,
yeah.
With that in mind, I think there's a few people who just it's weird. It's such a scale where you have probably 8 or 9 people that are extremely willing to trade. And then some people just don't ever trade anything ever at all.
And in my opinion, those people who come to mind are Jake, Danny, EY, and then
I would say that's it.
That's it. Morin might fall into that group. I don't think I've seen many trades involving Morin.
I'll say Morin, I haven't seen many trades with. But I feel like potential trades, like he always like responds. Like he'll like talk to you about a trade.
And he'll be like, nah.
Yeah, but then he just like doesn't go through. Like, I mean, this is hindsight so far after the fact that I could divulge these details. But last year, him and I came extremely, extremely close to basically the same trade that I got Todd Gurley for from Walsh. I was going to get Antonio Brown from Morin, and he chose not to do it.
Yeah.
But we were like, I had sent the trade and he had said, I'm going to accept, or like, yeah, I think we should do this. And then I think it was you who told him not to do it, not to call you out. Like, I don't care. But I think it was you who told him not to do it. And then he didn't do it. But, But I mean, at least Morin's like, you know, like willing to chat, like willing to come to the table. EY, I've probably sent EY many texts just to get a feeling on what he's thinking, maybe what who's available, what he's doing. And he, I don't think he ever even responds. Jake responds asking for your best player. Like, you ask Jake, like, for a player on his bench, like that he's never going to start. And Jake will be like, okay, give me Le'Veon Bell. And you're like, all right, thanks. You're like, all right, thanks, Jake.
I sent a well-thought-out trade to Jake, and I just got two laughing emojis and then, like, the okay emoji back.
And then Jake makes no roster acquisitions either. Like, unless like, one of his players is, like, dead, or if it's his defense, basically the team he drafts is the team he ends with.
Yeah.
So I give him credit for having that much vindication and belief in the players that he brings on from the get-go. And then Danny is a tough one because I feel like nobody wants to be done over by Danny. So,
well,
and
then, I think it's that, but it's also that Danny's ego doesn't allow him to trade because he wants to say that, oh, I drafted this team and it got me this far. And he's willing to even sacrifice performance just to say, like, hey, this is my team, and if it gets me to where I want to be, then I earned it.
Yeah, I think he definitely prides himself on being able to say that his team is organic, which makes no sense, seeing as trades are just a fact of life in any league, anywhere. Like, this isn't 1930s where baseball players aren't allowed to leave the team. Like, unrestricted free agency and trades exist. Things happen, but yeah, Danny, he's a tough one. I don't really recall too many trades ever happening with him other than the, Ezekiel Elliott trade, 2 years ago with Chase, where he made the extraordinary gamble that Ezekiel Elliott would come back, or he made the extraordinary gamble that he would make the championship game, which would be Zeke's first game back from that 6-game suspension.
That was crazy.
And it paid off in the sense that Danny got to the championship, but then I beat him because Todd Gurley had those unbelievable games. And I think Elliott had a good game. I think he got like 15 points that week. If I'm remembering correctly, they played the Seahawks that week. It was a good trade by him in that scenario, but I think that might have been one of his only trades ever.
It had to have been.
I can't think of a single other one. Maybe like an inconsequential trade here or there for like a defense or something, but I can't actually even think of one like that. I think that might have been his only ever trade. And has EY ever made a trade?
I actually need to walk back on my take on EY because I did send him a text earlier this season. It was probably just after week one, and he was interested, but by the time he responded, it was delayed. It was a delayed response from EY, but by the time he responded, I had second-guessed myself, and I pulled it back.
Interesting. Yeah, I think what puts a bad taste in my mouth in terms of EY's trades is in 20 – whatever year David Johnson got hurt, and I sent EY trade after trade after trade to get – David Johnson, and EY refused. He never, I think at one point he stopped answering me, and you know, just really rubbed me the wrong way. Obviously ended up working out great for me because David Johnson never played, but yeah, maybe that's my beef. I don't know. I feel like and then since then, I don't think I've even tried to make a trade with EY, or maybe I've sent him requests. The only way to make trades in this league is you have to send the text or send the request and immediately send a text.
Yeah.
You can't just send a request.
You send it and you say, hey, just sent you a trade. Let's talk.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like, well, no, I'm not going to say it because I can't discuss my strategies anymore. The league has gotten too cutthroat and I'm 1-2.
That's fair. All right. Well, we're reaching Quentin Tarantino lengths here in our second episode, which
was requested
based on feedback. Yes, exactly. That people had the appetite to listen, which Evan, I think we can take that as a compliment, but
yeah, if people want to listen to us talk about the league, I'll talk about it all day. I don't, like,
it's easy.
Yeah. So And feedback in general is greatly appreciated for these podcasts.
And one thing I will say before we close it out, Anchor does have a great feature where you can submit questions, and I just recommend that you use it, because the better questions and ideas that we get from you guys, the better the content is going to be. So,
yeah, no doubt.
All right. Well, that is it. And the league will go on, and we'll be back for episode 3 next week after week 4 takes place.
All right. Sounds good.
Godspeed.
And now, an interview with Jack Panagos.
All right, now we are joined by a guest that needs no introduction. Jersey Juice, body mass, son of Jim Panagos, a polarizing figure in the league, Jack
Panagos. Good evening, gentlemen. Happy to be on coffin time anymore. Great job following the Giants tradition, Evan. But I'm happy to be here, talk about the league, and just ready to get things started.
Yes, since you're basically our first official guest of the league, and you were our first guest of the podcast ever, I believe. I think that's just a great honor that we've bestowed upon you.
Thank you. I mean, end of the day, I mean, you probably put your most popular figure to just kind of get things started, you know?
Yeah, we get the easy ones out of the way so that we could have the more hard-hitting interviews later.
Huh. Congrats. I'm Melvin Gordon, man. I think you're big time now.
All right, well, let's save that for the content.
All right, well, just to sort of address the elephant in the room here, I think everyone knows that the Hackberry took place this past weekend, and there was some growing tension between two people on this podcast, Evan Jackson and Jack Panagos. So I think this is a great forum to discuss those tensions and just talk it out. This can be almost a therapy session. So, Evan, I guess I'll let you kick it off. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I don't have too many problems with Jack, but probably my biggest one is with his mouth. For somebody with zero playoff wins, fact check me on that, he talks as if he's won the league all 4 years in a row. And it really just doesn't make any sense to me. I never say a peep in this league, and all I've done is won 50% of the championship. I basically never say anything, and I'm getting chirped left and right. So, Jack, I just would love to know what's going through your mind when you say these things to me.
I mean, end of the day, I'm just confident in my ability. I know exactly it hasn't shown. I've got off some poor starts, had some injuries the past few years. But at the end of the day, I just always kind of act like I want to win, you know? Like, that's how you got to act. And, I mean, when it comes to people who I just feel like question my ability, Evan, I just feel like there's some hostility. I mean, other people like Billy, I mean, he's on the bottom of my list. I mean, I just really don't like some people's attitudes and the way they come at me. I mean, I feel like all I do is just breathe, and at the end of the day, somebody comments on my questions in the league. It's just, I don't get it. There's, how many people in this league? 14?
12.
12, there you go. 12 people. And I feel like sometimes it's just me on an island and 11 other people on the other side.
It's funny you should say that. When I was on the phone somebody who shall remain nameless for like a half hour the other night, just going over all the trade scenarios with him, just doing everything I can to help him. And then at the end of the phone call, you know what? I think I'm good with trades for the week. Hangs up. I won't say who that was, but it's somebody who's very relevant to the podcast right now.
In the words of Get Rich or Die Trying on MTV growing up, show no love. Love will get you killed.
Wow.
Did you come with that prepared?
No, I mean, did everybody watch that movie growing up on MTV in high school, like staying up late at night?
50 Cent.
I never saw it.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
Homie got shot 8 times.
I was too busy watching film, game film.
Yeah, I mean.
Does he play in the movie, 50?
Yeah. He does.
I got to go back and watch it. Yeah. Anyway, as a 2-1 team in this league, as you mentioned, there are many people questioning the moves that you've made this week, trade specific. I guess I want to give you the floor to address those criticisms.
I mean, at the end of the day, I already had injuries week one. Week two, Drew Brees, my tight end, Hunter Henry, who was pretty much only – he was a great could have had a great year so far this year. But, I mean, I kind of made some switches, kind of got a little too aggressive. But at the end of the day, I'm not a big guy on West Coast football. And if you realize my team, it's everybody's on the East Coast except for my quarterback. And I think that's just kind of what happened.
Do you think it'd be fair to say that you have an extremely long memory when it comes to your players, that once they get on your bad side, that's it? You're looking to get them on the next bus out of town?
I mean, just being a football guy, you know, just like all the history of football, like you kind of just always go back to the guys that were good like 5 years ago. And sometimes it's tough to move on, get with the millennial generation and try to compete in a league like this.
Would you say that you could have more patience with your players, specifically Philip Lindsay?
At the end of the day, I don't smoke and he lives in Colorado.
Wow. That's a trade. Just that specific move just rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know what to say about it. I know it didn't necessarily backfire, but Philip had a great week. It's just something to keep an eye on. But
at the end of the day, I have the best running back in the league, and now I have a top three tight end, so I'm feeling pretty good.
No, it's fair.
I mean, if it's your team, you could do whatever you want to it, obviously.
And I don't know why people can't keep their name out of my mouth. It's ridiculous.
Who are you saying this to?
Nobody in specific.
The reality of it is that every trade is fair in the eye of the team that is making it. So
yeah, I mean, nobody makes a trade being like, oh, I want to make my team worse.
Yes.
But I think when some trades deserve, like, I've made trades with people that I would not have made if I was on the other side of it. But, you know, that's just fantasy. That's just fantasy football.
Yep. No, for sure.
And Jack, what was surprising to me was, all right, say what you want about the Philip Lindsay trade, but then your second trade that week was, I thought, extremely good, and one of the rare both teams get better trade.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I kind of had to just kind of suck it up and kind of, I mean, not really dip down in my wide receiver too, because Marvin Jones, I have very high hopes for Marvin Jones. Always a guy that comes back on my roster. Don't know why. I really don't know, but I mean, I think I got a great tight end as well. So, I mean, I'm happy for Mike. He's a football guy, from one football guy to another. Have fun with Los Angeles backfield this week. It's been the last week we have him. But, I mean, end of the day, I mean, I'm trying to compete. I'm trying to win. And I really want to make a run in the playoffs.
You really can't question Mike's trades at this point. He's proven that he
– I mean, at the end of the day, who puts in more hard work than Mike? Like, you really just got to just give a clap to the guy and just do whatever you can to try to compete with him, because that dude has a lot of heart. Grit, some may say. I mean, just even in starting from the 96 days, I mean, just always down, play a little NCAA. The guy just loves football. Maction, NFL football, props to Mike.
Props to Mike.
Nothing but love.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of football guys, you know, when we have guests on the show, we like to dig into their history a little bit, see what makes them tick, see where they've been, see where they're going, you know, just get a real understanding for the type of person that you or any other guest is. And so when we were going over your biography, we noticed that you were the son of a football coach. Would you say this ancestry has rubbed off on you in any way?
I mean, without a doubt, growing up in the Viking days, just tailgating in 0-degree weather, I mean, you really just can't get any more grittier. And it's just the love for football that started at an early age was very present. For some reason, I didn't really get the gene. I can't jump. I can't run. And I cried every time I got hit in third grade playing football. But, I mean, the passion I have is it's good, not great. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I think I'm a football guy through and through.
I would say I agree. I agree with all those statements.
I feel like going to in 0 degrees, you have no choice but to just adapt.
I mean, at the end of the day, I was conceived at a tailgate.
Wow.
Do you know this for a fact?
No, I completely made that up. I was actually conceived on a beach. Congrats on the sex.
What tailgates do you think provide, I guess, would that be the right word, the most pregnancies or babies?
By Bills, right? Hello?
Yeah, I think Bills. Maybe I feel like sometimes it might just be too cold up there, though. Like, I don't.
But I mean, end of the day, they're 3-0. Whatever they're doing it right.
I'd say Bills are up there. I feel like Dolphins would probably be up there. Have you seen the videos?
Anybody go to the game anymore? Tailgates?
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't that the Bucks?
It might have been the Bucks.
I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was a Dolphins tailgate. There was just a stripper there.
And I don't know if you guys have ever been to Tampa Bay, but the area around it, it's the stadium. It's very.
I've never been there.
Yeah, it's not too up and coming. It's not Austin, Texas, right, Jake?
Wow, shots fired. All right. Ryan, did you have another question you wanted to ask Jack?
I think just coming out of Hack Week, obviously a lot of beverages were consumed. So I thought potentially a fun segment could be, if each league member was a drink, what drink would they be? And we can start from the top. We can do just sort of a rapid fire thing. So, Michael, how is it first place? What do we think Mike is?
Probably
could be so many things.
Probably just a nice 6 ounces with ice cubes of whiskey.
Wow.
Yeah.
On a Wednesday night with Central Michigan in the background, playing against Akron.
Yeah, I think that's a I think, you know, if we're going name brands, maybe Evan Williams.
Yeah, or a little nice little Jameson.
Yeah, I think that's a real good comparison for him.
This next of a layup, Matt Morin. I think everyone could say, if we just timed it off 3-2-1, that is a rum.
I was gonna say like a daiquiri.
But I could go even a mimosa. Wakes up in his fancy Miami hotel.
Yeah.
And then he buys the whole mimosa breakfast thing for everybody, but it's on his dad's money. So did he pay for it?
Like,
I know he works 3 hours a week,
he pays for the whole thing on his dad's credit card. And then like 3 hours later, you get a Venmo request.
So like, thanks, Mr. Morin. Like, should I Insta-DM him? Like, I don't really understand it. Let me know, Morin.
next in the standings is EY.
Gin and tonic
in Bartlett, and he's listening to some random EDM song, and he has the Three Blind Mice sunglasses on, and he's fist pumping like there's no tomorrow.
The Hank Moody's
He has the Hank Moody's. He is Mr. Kyle for education. I think I have a new nickname for EY I just made up in my head.
I'm let's ride with it.
The only thing is that Hank Moody did California completely different than EY did.
Huh. Do explain.
Well, EY has a girlfriend.
Hey, congrats on the sex.
And Hank Moody like basically hooked up with half the female population on the West Coast when he was over there. So I feel like it's a little bit different. EY's been
probably rubbing old people's feet as an occupational therapist. Congrats.
He's been like a faithful, I'm assuming, boyfriend, you know, relationship guy. Hank Moody went over there and was like
pounding puss.
Yeah, exactly. So
can we scratch that? I don't think I should say pounding puss on a podcast.
We can't edit in the middle of podcasts, so anything you say is being released.
All right, we'll talk about that offline.
All right. This is
Billy Rose.
This is an interesting one.
We got to think about this.
Probably like
I would say, Jack. Do you want to go first? You could go first.
I'm just gonna say straight Sveca and club soda.
Wow,
I was gonna say
not a very good drink.
I was gonna say like a green tea shot.
That's okay. I mean, end of the day, it's just like a sketchy little thing that you consume. You don't really want it. It just kind of comes around, and you kind of just want to punch in the face
or,
every time you
see it. Or like a tequila shot. I'm just trying to think of like what I'm looking at when somebody says, "Oh, Billy just bought drinks," and I turn around. And
yeah,
that's like
yeah.
that's what's lined up on the bar.
Yeah.
I feel like it's usually either green tea or tequila.
Yeah, I was going to say tequila shot, but I think green tea is fitting after Hackberry.
All right, I'll just go kick rocks.
This Fedka call was so far out of left field, but hey, I love it.
I thought Jack was going to say green tea shot. That's why I was like, oh, Jack, do you want to say it? But
hey, I'm all looks, no brains.
All right, next.
Yeah, exactly.
Next, we have Matthew Walsh. Well, does everyone just set the story or set the scene here? Friday night, Queens. Matt looks across the bar of New Queens, mind you. There's a beautiful new setup inside the bar, and he sees three young ladies. And by young, I mean 60 plus.
Pre-social security, though.
Correct. And Matthew walks over and buys them a green tea shaker, if I do recall correctly, and they absolutely ate it up. So I have to go with green tea shot for Matthew on this one.
Green tea, but I think we go a little more on the rail on a Sunday.
Wow.
Like 11:30, like, hey, we should go home. And then like a couple green tea shots come, a call from Shannon happens, and you just kind of go from there.
When I think of Walsh, I kind of think of like Ciroc green apple.
Oh,
I actually love that. That's a great call.
That's what springs to my mind.
No, that's good. The toga days.
Yeah.
When Walsh was a mere 13 years old. That's good.
Yep. 9 long years ago.
All right. Next, we have Jack, and Jack, obviously, you can't participate in this one. So, Evan, thoughts?
What would I say Jack is? Oh, of course, I know this. Vodka and coffee.
Wow. Okay. I think that's great. It's fitting. And it's in the theme of fantasy football, too. Of the story live draft.
A hallowed moment in the league.
I would say I'd have to go with Travelers Club.
What would you guys say the professional sport equivalent to that day was, that draft day, with the coffee, vodka? I think other things happened that day. Starts with Y, ends in Ard. I would say that day is like the steroid era for baseball, where like it was an extremely dark time. You know, everybody turned a blind eye to what was going on. But then you look back on it and you're like, wow, wasn't it so cool watching McGuire and Sammy Sosa go for the record? And like the ball was just flying out of all, like, everywhere. It was like so much fun going to the game. And like you look back on it kind of fondly, kind of like, did it go too far?
Yeah. I agree. I think that perfectly sums it up. You look back and say, wow, that was incredibly fun, but some things you want to take back.
And then you look at the lasting implications. Haven't had a live draft since.
Destination drafts in the future, though. We need to stay woke on that.
Yeah, that's going to be a sure thing.
Next is an individual named Ryan Rose. I'm going to step back on this one.
Wow, what do we say for Ryan? Obviously not Fireball. Or maybe it is Fireball, because your hatred of Fireball makes me associate Fireball with you.
Opposites attract in a way.
Yeah. It's the Barbra Streisand effect, where the more you try not to get something or have something known, the more known it is.
For Ryan, I'm going to go with – this is a tough one. I'm going to go with, like, a very fruity drink on the beach.
Okay, so Jack literally thinks you're dirt, Ryan.
Well, at the end of the day,
like, he's absolutely right.
We could all be at a table, and we would all be like, "Oh, get this, this, and this," and Ryan will be looking at the menu, and he'll pick some bottom drink that says like
frozen daiquiri.
I want to have a sex change, you know.
No, it's true. Like if I see a good cocktail, I'm gonna order it. I'm a big margarita guy, mixed drink guy. Probably not a beer guy. Morgan can attest to that. We're in probably a similar boat, but fair. Yeah. I take no criticism to that. Up next, we have Daniel Freeman,
aptly named Ted Ginn Buckets, but that's not what Danny would be, in my opinion. I think Danny would be like an extremely high alcohol content, like expensive beer that he has a six pack of, and that's it, with a running tally of how many he's drank so far.
Yeah, remember when he brought that like wine bottle size like October IPA into Bartlett, and it was just drinking straight from the bottle?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment of Danny Freeman.
Unbelievable that you just truly can't make it up.
Like,
it's amazing.
We're drinking Keystone like 4.5%, like Coors like 5%, whatever. Danny's drinking like 8.7%. And then like you'll just be like, you know, like minding your own business, and then Danny's like, "Yo, how many is that for you?" And I'll be like,
"Yeah,
I don't know, like three." He's like, "All right, like I'm on my fifth."
Danny keeps exact stats, and it's just purely to flex on other people.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, interesting one here. He goes by the name of Soaked Beef. Lewis Bodine.
Wow.
Hear me out. Louis's gone on a lot of great trips, extravagant trips with Amanda, and with this has posted some Instagram stories, as one does. But I have sensed a common theme, which is I respect, and personally I can't criticize him for this, but I've seen a lot of flowers in the drinks. So I just picture Louis sipping out of a nice little cocktail glass, maybe something similar to a little martini glass with a like pink and white flower and an umbrella. And that's what I think of when I think of Lou.
Yeah, I think that's
I'm
going
to go with Louis. I'm going to go with the transfusion, actually.
Wow. That's a great call.
I just feel like he's always working hard, wink, and he's got some bags on, and we get a Snapchat of him drinking a transfusion. I think it's a very accurate description of Lou.
Jack, that's a great call.
Thank you. Humble.
Evan, thoughts on Lou?
I liked your, because I could picture like the exact Snapchat that Lou sends of like the drink taking up 40% of the frame, and then the top of his head in there. And then him captioning it like something about
like privilege or something.
Yeah. Or like XYZ just paid for my vacation. Like, thanks. Like something like that. I don't know. Spitballing here.
All right. Next we have Evan Jackson. Does that change your perspective? Jack?
I'm going to go with Evan. I'm going to go with Evan like a fishbowl from Stuff kind of guy. Like very like communal, like very like kind of go with the flow. Doesn't have a specific drink. That's kind of what I see, Evan. You know, he's a guy's guy at the bar, you know? I mean, end of the day, the guy's going to break out in a rash for us. I mean, the guy cares.
He leaves it out there.
I left everything out there, Hack Week. People were asking me what disease I had.
What disease I have? I have Hack Week disease. Sorry.
The shared the most of this drink with is Evan, and I'm going to have to go with a car bomb from Kelly's.
Yeah, wow. I thought that that's what Jack was going to say as well.
No, I guess you don't really know me, Evan.
I think that's an apt description. I was all if you had asked this question 3 years ago, I think everybody would have said Four Loko. But I don't think I've had a Four Loko for it since like my junior year.
I was gonna say Four Loko for Jack, but I thought
yeah, that's a sore subject. We're all friends here, man. We're not trying to break anybody's heart.
That's why I didn't say it.
I'm not trying to cry on this Wednesday night alone in my apartment. I'm doing fine. Don't worry about it. I'll be up at 4 a.m. tomorrow, guys. I feel great. Don't worry. Nobody shoot me a text after you hear this. Don't worry. I don't need any help.
All right. Okay. This one is pretty easy.
This one needs Jake... Yeah.
I mean, we could almost skip over it. Jake Stockwell, yeah. He's clearly, you can almost just picture the snap. He's in the convenience store in Austin, Texas. He walks back to the liquor section, opens up the door, reaches his hand in there and pulls out a mixed variety case of White Claws and proceeds to go back to his apartment. And
I think at this
guy just got done with the shorty date night.
I think at this stage you could put Jake into blindfolded into a liquor store and just say, all right, go grab a case of claws, and he could just find them. He has like a sonar sense for it.
Yep. 100%. And last but not least, we have the resident pilot, Brendan Smith.
I think Boo Smith, I think he's a water bottle Sveka kind of guy.
That's interesting.
I was kind of like, I was gonna say Red Bull vodka. I don't even.
Yeah, like just very like to the point. Like he's not trying to like he knows what he's here to do. He'll be the first one to get started. He just got done playing Call of Duty for a couple hours, just waking up, and he's just like, all right, let's get back at it.
I was gonna say Fireball for B. Smith, and I can't remember specifically if he was a Fireball guy, but I for some reason just associate him with that with that variety of liquor.
I mean, end of the day, he's just a high energy, get to the point kind of guy.
I said Red Bull vodka because I feel like that's kind of like the official drink of Queens, and true. I just picture B. Smith like in Queens.
That's a great point.
So that's why I said it.
Well, Jack, it's been an absolute pleasure. Do you have any last parting words before we say goodbye?
I mean, at the end of the day, thank you guys for having me. You guys put in a lot of great effort. The league's great because of you guys. I really owe a lot. But other than that, I might respect you guys, but I don't want to be friends with anybody here during football season. At the end of the day, I'm trying to win. I'm trying to actually compete for a championship. I'm tired of coming to the bottom half. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Jack.
Well said. Thanks for coming on.
All right, talk to you guys offline. Bye.